Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
The title of this talk is called On the Path of Discovery. So I've split this talk in four parts. So I'm going to start with part one. Part one, calmness. Once upon a time in ancient Japan, at a prestigious Zen temple lived a young diligent monk who served his Zen master. One day, this master called upon this diligent monk and handing him a script roll and said, "Take this letter to its recipient in the city of Kyoto as fast as possible. And it is of vital importance. Under no circumstance can this letter be lost or fall into the wrong hands." Without losing any time, the young Zen monk packed some of his provisions and a sword and was on his way to deliver his master's letter. He traveled swiftly until he reached a river with a narrow bridge across it. On the river, there stood a samurai who had sworn to challenge the first 100 men and who would try to cross the bridge. He had already killed 99 men and was eager to complete the task by killing this young monk. He shouted out to the terrified monk, "Now you have to fight me, prepare to die." Remembering the importance of the Zen master's letter, the Zen monk implored the samurai to allow him to bring the letter back to his master and swore to return to meet his fate after. The samurai granted him that wish. While on the way back to the temple, the Zen monk pondered his sad fate. Upon arriving at the temple, in hopes of getting help from Zen master, he relayed the samurai's challenge. Zen master said, "There is no way you can beat the samurai in this sword fight, so you will die. I will tell you the best way to meet death. When you reach the bridge, lift your sword over your head and close your eyes and stand still and wait. When you feel the cold touching your skull, that will be death." Once again, the student left the temple, this time ready to meet his death. He reached the bridge with the samurai waiting for him. He did exactly as instructed by his master. He lifted the sword over his head and closed his eyes and waited for the cold touch of death. When the samurai saw the Zen monk standing like this, suddenly thought he must have met a truly great master, since he had never seen a stance with closed eyes or nor such calmness before a fight. He dropped his own sword and beseeched the Zen monk, "O great master, forgive me for my impudence and allow me to be your servant and learn the true mastery of the sword from you." Now, there are times in our lives when we become excited, angry, or impulsive, causing harm to others and ourselves. In these moments, our Zazen practice reminds us to be like seagulls floating on ocean waves. Small or big wave, no problem. I will float on calmly. Part two, journey. A long time ago lived a young monk in Japan. His wish was to become enlightened. One day on his journey, he arrived at a bank of a river. Upon looking around, he saw no visible means of crossing it. After pondering for a few hours on many ideas for crossing the river, he gave up and was about to retrace his steps, when he spotted a Zen teacher standing on the other bank. He yelled to the older man, "I'm stranded here. Can you tell me how to cross to the other side? The Zen teacher, after looking up, down, looking up and down the river, but for a few minutes, and yelled back, "My good fellow, you are on the other side." Throughout our lives, we constantly take journeys. We journey on this earth, we journey in our psyche, we journey in our hearts. T.S. Eliot wrote, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first times." Travels we undergo in our lifetime change our understanding of our physical world, our fellow human beings, and most significantly, of ourselves. Or, simply put, as Dogen Zenji said, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. Part 3, non-attachment. One day, a young man came to see the Buddha and asked him to explain his teachings in simple terms. The Buddha asked him, "Do you have a son?" And the young man answered, "Yes, I do." "Does your brother have a son?" "Yes, he does." "Do your neighbors have a son?" "Yes, they do." "Do the persons unknown to you personally have sons?" "Yes, they do." "Well, then tell me, if your son dies, how sad will you be?" The young man answered, "I would feel incredibly sad, and I would not be able to bear that news and feel that my entire world is collapsing. I wouldn't imagine to make it through." "If your brother's son dies, how sad will you feel?" "Sir, I would be devastated, but not to the extent of my own son dying." "If your neighbor's son dies, how sad will you feel?" "I would feel some sadness, but not to the extent of my brother's son dying." "If the son of a person unknown to you personally dies, how sad will you feel?" "I would not feel any sadness." Then the Buddha said, "Then the extent of your sadness is relative to your what?" After thinking for a moment, the young man replied, "Sir, the level of my sadness is relative to the extent to which I hold the sadness as me or mine." "Good," said the Buddha, and he continued, "When you took your son to the beach, did he not make sand castles?" "Yes, he did." "When the ocean waves broke the sand castles, did your son not cry?" "Yes, he did." "Did you cry too?" "And I did not." "Why did you not cry?" "Sir, the child cries because he thinks the sand castle is pretty and permanent, hence he is attached to it." "I knew the sandcastle is not permanent, so I did not cry when the waves broke it." Buddha said, "Now you understand. If you do not see this world as it is, you will go through this endless cycle of samsara, where there is no difference between kids who cry when the sandcastles are swept by the waves and you." Buddha taught non-attachment, because nothing in this world is permanent. When we attach ourselves to something or someone, then we come to live with the consequences of this attachment. Part 4, Land's End. A few years back, one Tuesday early afternoon, I drove to Sunset Beach in San Francisco, parked the car, and I walked down to the shore, saw the marine headlands in the distance, big calm ocean in front, a vast open sky above me, and the city of San Francisco behind me. I sat on the sand, taking a Zazen posture, legs crossed, back and head straight, hands in the mudra position, I felt the sun above, cold breeze on my body, sounds of the waves crashing, seagulls squawking while flying. After 10 minutes of zazen, a feeling of wonder arose. I had arrived at Land's End. Distant mountains stood tall like giants, uncountable grains of sand below my feet, like stars above. Ocean like time flowing infinitely. I suddenly was no one, nobody. Looking back, now I realize all I was just happy. To this day, I sit zazen, letting go of my attachments to material desires, past regrets, future expectations. On this path of discovery, diligently, I learn from my mistakes and move forward with tenacious perseverance. Thank you. Any questions?
Janet.
Thank you, Umar. That was a wonderful description of you on the beach. And your realization that you were just happy. Do you think if we were all just mostly happy, we'd still be drawn to this practice?
I don't think there's a difference between zazen and life anymore. Zazen is life, and life is zazen. That's what it is. So if you had asked me this question a long time ago, I would have said no. But now I can say to you, yes, sitting zazen is life, and this is what it's all about. It's the realization of the greater self.
Right, but don't you think that there's some dissatisfaction that we feel that brings us to Zen practice in the first place? Right.
Yes, of course. We all have dissatisfactions in life. I came to the Zazen practice because I had dissatisfactions in my life. My plan was not to be in Northern California. All of my teachers had said to me, you need to be down in Southern California. Southern California didn't work out for me. So there was a lot of dissatisfaction about, you know, not being in the film industry and not being with my college girlfriend who became my wife. But I came back and there was a lot of dissatisfaction. It takes time. It takes, I think, sitting and realizing that it's sometimes just not to have anything, it can make you happy. So yeah, there is a lot of dissatisfaction in the world. A lot of us come to this practice out of dissatisfaction, hurt and unhappiness in our lives. Yeah. So, but I don't think it's really a medicine. It's just that it's a realization that this is life, that this is Zazen is also a part of life, that when we sit, we are one with everything. So, yeah.
Thank you. I never realized you were fleeing from Hollywood.
Yeah, no, I was fleeing from a divorce and a lot of other problems from yeah, so not only Hollywood. Yeah, I was a part of Hollywood up here. I used to work for TV shows. I worked for a TV show called Nash Bridges with Don Johnson and Cheech Marin. And I was on that movie with Robin Williams, Patch Adams. I worked on that too. So there was a lot of stuff that I did. But yeah, that's another life. Yeah.
Philip has his hand up.
Yes, Philip. I'm sorry.
Thank you for your beautiful talk. I find myself wondering if you would give us a clue about part five.
Part five. Part five. I don't know. Part five is interesting. Part five is now. This is everything is right here, right now. So it's life as I know it right now. I mean, you know, I think part five has been this past whole year. I just took a break from working because I, you know, my wife needed me home. So, and working was getting in the way of sitting. It was just like they were making me work nights when I had to go to meditation in the morning. So I had to just leave that. And I said, I can't do that. If I can come in early. And so it's, I think part five is practice and my wife needing me more than anything else. And that's what part five has become now. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, Dan.
I was thinking I was going to ask you about something that Buddha said, but I was just thinking about what you said, and I wanted to ask you. You come in on many mornings, and how do you think that not just the sitting, but just that whole effort? Like how do you relate to that? What have you experienced with that?
Can you elaborate a little bit more?
Well, it's probably taken, you know, some discipline to get up at 4:30 in the morning, you know, several times a week and come in and do that. And I know I open up on Thursdays and that's taken, you know, it's it kind of changes your life a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, you know, how you think your life has been affected. I mean, the sitting is one thing, but just the actual effort around the whole experience of coming in and doing it on a, being responsible and doing it on an ongoing basis. It in itself, I imagine, I mean, I think of it as a practice.
It is a practice. The phone goes off every morning at 4:20, and get up and, you know, just like, oh, okay. Just get up and just go to the restroom and, you know, start getting ready, put things together, put things on. And the most fun part is that sometimes the windshield is frozen. It's just completely, there's like, it's so cold in the, it's been so cold in the past few months that there's ice on the windshield. So it's like, you know, go. And so I've gotten into the habit of carrying a cup of water with the lid on it so that we can put it on the windshield and unfreeze it. And that's just become a ritual now. But it's more, I think it's more like, it's more automatic than anything. Alarm goes off, get up, get ready, put on clothes, put on, get everything ready, make sure that I have everything. And there are times when I've forgotten things, and just like, like last Saturday, I forgot my sweatpants. So I had to work the work period in my, you know, in the kimono. So, you know, took off the black robe and the kimono and hung it up. Just sat in my kimono and did all the work with an apron. Had to do the altars, but it's more automatic. I don't know if there's a effort anymore. I do get tired during the day. I mean, around 3 o'clock, it's sort of, I started going down. So I just go and lie down for like an hour, or take a half an hour nap or an hour nap, and then get up again and take care of the rest of the day and, yeah, work things out. But it takes time. It just takes time to do it over and over and over again. And I think one of the things that I've started doing is not to think about it too much, because if I start getting into thinking, then I'm doing this, it just starts to mess with me. It just starts to go like, oh, you know, oh, what about this and what about that? I'd like, no, I don't think about it. I just, one thing after the other, what's the next thing that I have to do? What's the next thing I have to do? What's the next thing I have to do? You know, did I do this? Did I do this? I think it's more like a list that I go through. Like, it's a mental list. So I just go through a mental list and just go and do it. That's it.
That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Philip's raising his hand.
Yes, sir.
I was thinking about the just doing it. Would that be standing with your sword over your head with your eyes closed, or the second part of being realizing that you already are on the other side?
One more time. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I was just relating it, and I'm sorry, I'm maybe getting a little drifty late at night, but whether that would be standing with your sword over your head, your eyes closed, or would it be realizing that you're already on the other side of the river?
Or, that's a good question. That's a good question. Like, I think, I think it's more about being ready. I think whatever happens, that's what it is. It comes down to, and just having the readiness of the mind. Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Yeah. So.
Thank you.
I think it would come down to readiness. Yeah, definitely. Being ready for whatever happens and not be taken in by any kind of suffering that says that I need to be this way or I need to possess something that it, you know, and be that way, then I'm not that way, so I'm not okay. Or if I don't have that, I'm not okay. Or if I haven't. So I think it's just being okay with whatever it is and always being ready for whatever comes is the best way to deal with life. And I think it's not being really, it's not even fear, it's more like, okay, whatever comes, we'll handle it. You know, that's more the attitude now.
Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.